Good evening, folks, and welcome to the May episode of Myth Behaving. I almost said it
you
again,
almost said
Robin.
Mythbusters, huh? You were there.
I stopped myself.
You're
then I outed
there.
Myself. So we're I guess there. I either way it's a screw up. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great, Kari. How you doing?
I'm well. How's sunny Southern California treating
you? Oh, it was
you?
A lovely day today. It was low 70s, so it wasn't too hot. Partly cloudy. We had rain the other day, which was so nice. So it's a beautiful Southern California. I'm sure that it will erupt in fire and screaming any day now.
Oh, right, because you have the seasonal fires. Here
all
in
year
British
round.
Columbia, we are getting those as well. But we've had nothing but rain, like a month of rain. So we've got some nice weather this weekend, so everybody's really happy.
Nice.
That's nice to be out. It's a long weekend here in Canada.
Oh, is it? What is it? Is it Moose Day?
No, no, Rob. Every day is Moose Day
every
in Canada.
Day is Moose Day. Is it
this
some
is
kind
Victoria
of hockey
Day? No,
it's what?
Not. No, we don't. We believe it or not, we don't have hockey holidays.
All right. I'm sorry. What day is it?
It's Polar Bear Day.
Polar Bear Day, really?
No, it's not. It's actually Victoria Day.
Because
I'm going to be a little bit hard on historical Canadians, but you know, we didn't fight for our independence. We were just like, yeah, okay, whatever. We're England. We're rural England.
You just out-kinded them. We did. They're like, you're all, could we please be independent? No. Can we please be independent?
Come on, you're being mean. But guess what, Rob? We didn't fight for our independence, so we get an extra holiday.
Okay, fine. That's you win.
So there's that.
You win again.
There's that.
Canada wins again.
So who do we have with us for our Victoria Day episode, Rob?
Our victim for today, poor guy, he's got to put up with us, is actually a buddy of mine. I'm so excited. Matthew C. Matt Lucas, that's who we have today. He writes speculative fiction in his hometown of Tampa, Florida. Do not hold that against him, where he lives with his wife and their two sons. His brand runs the gamut from dark metaphysical epic to droll historical fantasy and a lot of stuff in between. His debut novel, The Mountain, was published by Montag Press in 2021. His recent historical fantasy novel, of which I was one of the editors, The Lost Lock, the first book of his Yonder and Far series, features a pair of fae who find themselves trapped in Boston of 1798. It released this May from Elysian Press. He's also published short stories in various venues, one of which you can read for free if you just scroll over a couple of tabs. Matt did his undergraduate work at Florida State University and then studied law at the University of Florida. He polls for the Noles, but for diplomacy's sake, he'll also root for the Gators as long as they're playing someone else. After a decade in private practice, he became a state court trial judge. Since late 2014, he has served as an appellate judge on a district court of appeal. Matt Lucas, Kari.
Wow, what an impressive resume. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you all so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure to be here.
What an
Matt,
honor.
When do we get to saw Florida off from the United States and just push you into the ocean? When does that happen?
We've already done it, Rob. Oh. We're already well on our way. We are floating out into the Gulf of Mexico even as we speak.
So why did you say that? Why did you say don't hold it against him for living in Florida?
Oh, go ahead, Matt. Explain Florida to
there's
Canadian
this thing.
Friend.
There's this thing called Florida Man, and it's a real thing. Just Google it, and you will find 10,000 stories of hilarity and nonsense that just can't be made up. We've got some great characters down here in the Sunshine State.
If you do need to look up Florida Man, he is not making this up. If there is
that's a real thing,
crazy wackiness. That is true, not Onion, like the Onion makes up stuff. Now, if there's some really crazy wackiness where somebody was arrested for something crazy, it's probably in Florida. It's Florida Man.
My favorite one to date is the headline of the man who robbed a drive-through Wendy's with an alligator. And no one's really sure how he pulled that off, if it was using the alligator or the alligator was an accomplice, but it was part of the crime.
You know what? I have nothing but deep, deep admiration for that man. I'm sorry.
with alligator.
I'm sorry. I, you know what? Because I often talk about using alligators as weapons, like a harpoon or a chainsaw or an alligator. And I actually just posted in a group the other day, and they believed me that I had an alligator. It was actually Tamora Pierce. Have you ever heard of Tamora Pierce? She's a fantasy author.
Yeah, I know Tamora Pierce. I know of her, not I don't know her.
You love her. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. But she had posted somebody had written something. I can't even remember what it was about, but we were all going to attack somebody. And this woman says, I'm in with my bow. And Tamora says, and my axe. And somebody else wrote, and my crossbow. And I wrote, and my alligator.
And you win.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, wow.
There's nowhere to go. If you've got an right. alligator, you win.
I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I went too far. But, you know, so I don't know. I like Florida. I've been a couple times. But
Where
I do
have you
know
been in Florida?
I just went to Florida 2 years ago. I went to Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
Another time I went to Pensacola. Another time I went somewhere else. I can't remember.
You've been a lot then. That's impressive.
I've been to Florida three times. Florida's lovely. You know, I love being
there. As a tourist,
there.
I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, no, it's great. So you live in Florida. Is that an inspiration for your writing at all, Matt?
So I would say, yeah. I mean, just because when you're, you know, stuck in sweltering heat and mosquito infested swamps, it gets the creative juices flowing. But the very first thing I ever wrote actually was basically a long love letter to Florida. It was this kind of long middle grade chapter book that was basically imagine Watership Down, but with, an alligator, a bear, you know, instead of the rabbits. And that was the very first novel I ever finished start to finish. It was basically set in Florida. So it definitely it's a state that's rich with creative inspiration.
And so your first book was about talking animals.
It was. Yeah.
Tell us what it was about.
When I say that it was loosely based on Watership Down, what I mean was it was basically Watership Down just put in Florida.
Okay, so just these and a bear. What kind of bears do you have down there?
We got some. They're smaller and shaggier than the biggins that y'all have up in Canada, but you don't want to mess with them down here either. So we've got bears. We've got all sorts of critters that would be happy to kill you down here in the Sunshine State. Yeah.
I feel like a bear and an alligator on a quest is a very different story than Watership Down.
Well, so they actually end up fighting at the very end. It was a fun story to write, and it was a great experience. It was the first time anyone who's ever finished a novel always remembers the first time that they wrote the end to the very first thing that they've ever finished. I was really really pleased to be able to finish that, but it was definitely Florida through and through.
That's
fantastic.
How old were you? Yeah. How old were you?
Gosh, that was probably, like in my early 30s.
Oh, okay.
When I finished that, and I pitched it around a little bit. This was back when you pitched a manuscript, you actually printed it out, and sent it out. And I actually had one publisher as an associate editor at Arthur Levine Books that liked it and said, hey, I'd like to see a revision of it, and sent me back all these, you know, notes and post-it notes all over it. And they didn't end up taking it, but it was a real inspiration and a real kind of pat on the back that said, okay, keep after this. Cause somebody thinks that what you're doing is okay. So, That was my first attempt, and it was fun. I still got it lying around. I ended up self-publishing that, thinking that it would be kind of a bucket list thing, little knowing that it just kind of all it was the beginning of a lifelong habit.
You just snowball. Yeah, most writers are like, oh, I'll just do this one book, and then it's like, you know, it's like drugs. You're just like, I got to get another hit of that.
That's a great way of putting it, Rob. It's I'm just an addict, man. I just need help.
What, man? What? You got another chapter?
Right. I got one more hit, man. Just one more.
One more. That's awesome. Hey, Matt, tell us a little bit about your new book. I'm totally biased. I love this. I love
as you should book. Be. You should be biased.
I think you know how much I love this book, Matt. I couldn't say enough nice things about it.
Thank you.
And I edited on it, you know, and that's somebody looking for problems. So,
oh wow, that's some good feedback, Rob.
Yeah, I was in love with it from I think almost the very start. I was like, oh, okay, but I'll let Matt tell it because you can't listen to me. So, all right, Matt, go.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure working with you and Mary and everybody at Elysian Press. So Yonder and Far, it started off as Yonder and Far. Now Yonder and Far, The Lost Lock, is basically the best way I can explain it is imagine if Susanna Clarke of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell fame got together with Patrick O'Brien of the Aubrey Matron novels and then put in a twist of Casablanca. So the idea is that it's written about these two gentlemen who are actually Fae, who find themselves trapped in our world that they call Doldrums, because it's a very dreary world to the Fae. And they're banished here, and they're banished in 1798 Boston. And one of them, John Yonder, has the brilliant idea that to get home, to get out of their banishment, what he should do is set up a law practice that caters to the Fae that are coming through our world. And he and his partner, Captain John Farr, take on a client who comes in one rainy November day and says, if you will find a lost lock of my hair that a very rascally former lover has taken, I will use my influence to try to get you home and out of your banishment. And so they are put on the chase of a man who goes by the name of Wild, who supposedly has her lock of hair. And they chase, they bring on board a not totally willing fortune teller named Mary Faulkner, who is able to, feel out or sense Wild's presence, and they go on a chase through Boston, outside of Boston, into an African American Masonic lodge, out into the Atlantic, where they have all sorts of adventures, and eventually into Virginia, where there's a great big culmination, and they find out that woman that hired them and the person that they've been chasing and the lock of hair that he holds, none of it is what they think it is.
Wow.
It was a blast to write.
It's great.
It was a lot of fun. So, and Elysian was absolutely terrific. Rob was a real trooper. He cut my manuscript up to shreds, but made it so much better. And I'm very appreciative to everything he did. When you work with a really good editor, it's a real joy going back over and reading your same stuff 10 times over and over.
It's so true. Editing process takes a while, in case anyone's wondering. It's a lot of work, and you do get, I hope you love what you wrote, because you will get to read it 10 times.
Because you will read it many, many times. That's right.
And they'll like, your editor will be like, I thought he said this like 3 chapters ago. You're like, I don't know. That's 3 chapters ago. I guess I'll have to go read what I wrote.
So true.
Yeah. What was the worst part of the editing process that you went through, Matt? What part, if you could cut, what would you say, this is what I'd like to jump right over?
You know, I'm kind of one of those weird souls that that I actually enjoy the pain of going back over it's there really wasn't anything that bad. The only thing I would say that is a challenge, and this is more on me, is the technology. Mm-hmm. Just having all the, you know, the computers meld up and making sure that, you know, what got put in gets inserted, and, you know, using the comment thing the right way. Because that, for me, I am technologically challenged. So anything above an abacus poses a difficulty for me. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, Mare was really good about walking me through some stuff about how to do different things. So that really made even that part easy. So I really enjoyed the editing process. It's it's fun because it takes you take your creative endeavor and you get to make it collaborative. And you get to get fresh sets of eyes and different ideas that you would have never thought of. And it makes the book better.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat with you. I think you and I talked about this. I love to be edited because that means the book is worth something and we're going to get it there and we're all working together. And I just eat that up. I'm like, you know, give me those notes. What do you want? What do you want? You need more description here. Well, let me give you some more description.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, absolutely.
I got it. I thought it was too much, but hey, I can give you more.
How does it feel when you find a book like that, Rob? Like when you look at it, so you're as an editor, and I think this is a major wonder for a lot of submitting authors. When you get a manuscript and you see it, you know it needs editing, but what was it that caught you about his book?
Mare was the one who actually, I think Mare offered you, right, Matt?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Mare actually offered. I didn't read. I was brought on after Matt was already signed to the press. And then Mare said, hey, would you be willing to take on Matt? And I glanced, I read like first three paragraphs and I was hooked. Yeah. It was
right in the first three paragraphs. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it doesn't matter if Mare picked him or not, right? You obviously helped edit the book and you,
it's a book
that you would have chosen. Let's pretend for a minute that you chose it. Yeah. Why would you have? Was it the first three paragraphs? What was it about Matt's book?
So he had me in his style, the way he was telling the story. We've mentioned Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and I loved that book. And when Matt said that to me, it just kind of clicked in what this book was and where we were going to go and how it was all going to work. And so that really helped. But it really was just, you know, his narrative prose was just so gorgeous. Like it was, makes my mouth water a little thinking about it. It was just like, this was some really good turn of phrase, some excellent, this kind of a slower pace to the book, with some really, really strong action scenes that just punctuate everything. But you had this sense, and I'm not a colonial historian at all, but you just kind of had the sense that this was colonial America post-revolution, and you know, some of the historical bits that Matt pulls in just made it tasty, and just the lyricism of his narrative prose, I was sold. So I loved it. I loved working on it. I think every fourth or fifth comment, Matt, was probably, this is gorgeous.
you were very kind.
Holy cow. I can't believe it. Like I would have to remember to edit, not just read. And that's a really good sign if an editor forgets to do their job, that they're so lost in the story.
And so,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, Rob was a real pleasure to work with on this. I think you actually did the first, I think it was the first pass on it. So it was still very much in the kind of diamond in the rough stage when he did the first pass and was just had some great ideas, caught some inconsistencies that just I was completely blind to, and kind of teased out some things that I hadn't thought of and just really helped make it a better product.
It takes a village.
It does.
Matt, so when you say, like, how do you plan your books? What's your writing process?
So it's evolving, and it's still evolving. The very first book I ever finished, that Talking Animal and the Roar in the Pinelands one, I finished that because I took a writing course. That I was not an English major by any stretch, but this was something that I just had the bug for, and I really wanted to finally finish one of the seven manuscripts that I had started. I guess, you know, I'd always get to like chapter three and just kind of conk out. So I took this writing course, and this woman had this this brilliant, eye-opening idea of outlining, you know, just why don't you draw up a map of where you're going to go and have a beginning, middle, and end, and outline, you know, the chapters and what's going to happen in each. And that had just, again, not an English major, that had never occurred to me. Your listeners are probably
they're like,
really, you are that dense. Right.
No. So we got a lot of answers. Mm. I don't understand it personally,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, so I'll tell you that insight and that advice was the difference. And that was how I was able to finish my first novel. What I found is that since then, I have relied much less and pulled back a lot on the upfront outlining part, to the point now that honestly, Yonder and Far was probably 75% pantsing, 25% plotting. I mean, I think I had, you know, kind of the first two, three chapters vaguely out, like a paragraph for each. I had a finish. And then Rob, you'll appreciate this. I think, the notes on the middle were, they're going to go out in the Atlantic and something's going to happen to them. And that was what I worked with.
And so it does, to be fair, it does happen to them.
Yeah. So stuff does happen. To
stuff
them.
Happens.
But that's about as much outlining as I do now. And I've been noodling this some, and, you know, I think the reality is that whether you're a pantser or a plotter, we're all trying to do the same thing. I mean, it's not like the essentials of a good story change depending upon how you write it. You still got to have character arcs. You've got to have development. You've got to have a good plot. You have to have rising and falling action and all that good stuff. Mm. That doesn't change depending upon how you write it. It's just the only difference is, where are you going to put the work? What's the workflow going to be? Are you going to front load it all, or are you going to spread it out more? Mm-hmm. What I've found for me that now works is, if I spread it out more, I think I get a little bit more of the good stuff that comes in. Now, what it means is that I end up having to go back a lot to fill in, particularly like subplot holes, kind of flesh those out. A lot of times I'll have, you know, like a character that got started, but that just kind of falls by the wayside. Well, you know, he's got to go. So it does mean that that there's more duplicative work. But for me, that kind of 75-25 mix seems to be what works best for me.
I want to know. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I think there's such a thing as overplotting. So
yeah,
I think mm-hmm. stories are born. You know, stories are developed as mm-hmm. you go. So it's impossible to like plan.
Well, and I think some people who like, I used to say I was total pantser, but I'm not really a total pantser. Like, I have a good idea what the start of the book is, what the middle mm-hmm. of the book is, and I usually know exactly how it's supposed to end. And I may not have all the details in between, but that's plotting, right? You don't. Yeah. I'm not really. Yeah. Flying around, you know, just throwing words on a page and hoping something sticks. So and I've talked with a few other people who are like, I'm a total pantser, and I'm like, but you know how it ends, right? Like, oh yeah, I know how it ends. Okay, well, that's a little bit of plotting. I think right. It really is a balance between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody just sits down with a blank sheet and a blank mind, having no idea what their story is going to be, and just, okay, muse, come into me, and right. and away we go. I mean, yeah, exactly. You have to have some idea where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, tell us about your writing habits, because you're a judge.
Yes.
And that's
not shocking. It's a little, it's always shocking.
I love it, because I work in law myself. I'm a legal assistant.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I am. And so it was funny when you were talking about your story and how, you know, these two lawyers go looking, and I thought, lawyers don't look for anything.
They have to have it brought to them. We all know that. Yeah.
You have a legal.
On a silver platter.
You're paralegal for, right? You're there. Right. Right?
Who are we kidding?
But yeah, like, it is fascinating that you're a judge. But it's also a full-time job with, you know, a lot of, mm-hmm. a lot of reading, a lot of, you know, reviewing. And so tell us about your writing habits. How do you, what do you do? How do you do it?
So yeah, you're absolutely right. The kind of judge I am as an appellate judge, reading and writing, that's my trade. That's what I do full time. It is a very particular kind of reading and a very particular kind of writing.
Yeah.
You know, ne'er the twain shall meet, fiction and legal writing, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
So what I do is, I find I've got a daily habit, daily goal of between 400 and 500 words. And they can be just schlock. They can be terrible or they can be brilliant prose. But as long as I'm putting down 400 to 500 new words a day, to me that, you know, I feel like I've made my accomplishment. And usually I don't often get that much more. I might get a 1,000-word day in every now and then, but not often. So it's usually that's kind of the pokey, plotty pace that I work at. Mm-hmm. Usually it's going to be kind of first thing in the morning or in the evening at night. You know, working hours, that's devoted to reading all sorts of briefs where, you know, people are telling me why what happened in their trials shouldn't have happened and, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so forth. And then my writing, you know, again, in the legal writing, it's a totally different thing, but for me, this is my hobby. I don't play golf. I don't really fish all that much. But I love to write. And particularly I love the freedom of creative writing because it is so different from legal writing because in mm-hmm. legal writing, you are so constrained.
Oh yeah.
In your style and in what you yeah. can get through. I mean, you can't make up a record. It is what it is. Right?
No.
At least in theory. They try. Yeah.
As much as you want to, right?
As much as you might want to.
Oh, this would really be better if there's some sword fighting.
Yeah. Judge, anyway, we just let the plaintiff and defendant go at it with swords. That would be a great way to solve this problem. But no, so fiction writing gives me that freedom to just make up my own rules, make up my own facts, and just kind of run with it. And I have enjoyed this creative writing since I was a kid, and I don't think I'm ever gonna stop. I love doing it, and like I say, I think it's going to just be a lifelong hobby.
Now, are you a first draft or bust person, or do you edit your own work as you go?
Edit as I go. So usually what will happen is when I, you know, let's say it's 8 o'clock at night, I'm sitting down. Okay, all right, let me crank out those 500 words. Usually what I'll do is I'll spend the first 10 or 15 minutes going back over what I had written the day before. You know, the goal is, or the idea is just, okay, refamiliarize myself, reorient to where we're at in the story. But invariably what ends up happening is, I don't really like what I wrote there. And, you know, this would be better if she had that line instead of him. So I end up editing the stuff that I wrote the day before. And then that kind of guides me into the new stuff. So I guess it's kind of an edit as I go. What I found at the end, and this, I think your listeners may appreciate this. When I do type the end, I've, as hard as it is to do, I absolutely have to put the thing away for at least a month before I even think of going back over and doing my first self edit over the entire work. Because when you type the end, you're just too close to it. Your brain will fill in gaps without even realizing that they're there. So I've found that works best for me is kind of that daily go back over edit. And then when I'm done, wait about a month mm-hmm. and then start right from the beginning and go through the whole thing and fix all the problems.
Most people say that they put their work away
on a shelf. Yeah. You shelf it for a little bit. Yep.
I've read that from a lot of people have said that. What kind of stuff do you like to read when you're not reading? Law books,
yeah.
Yeah, more law books,
more
no.
Laws.
When you're not reading files.
When I'm not reading files. A little bit of a mix. Mostly fiction, kind of historical fiction I've found is my favorite. I really love Patrick O'Brien, Mika Waltari, who's an old Finnish author. But in fantasy, you know, Susanna Clarke obviously is just fantastic. Naomi Novik and her Temeraire series. That's real fun. That's a neat little take on the Napoleonic Wars with dragons. Mm. So that kind of stuff. A little bit of nonfiction here and there. Like in history. So maybe that's where some of the history comes from that I bring into what I write. I'm working through this great big thick book on the Enlightenment that's really interesting. And it's like 1,000 pages. So it's going to take me forever to finish this, but that's it. I read about maybe 15-20 minutes a night, and then I'm conked out. That's it.
And then you're done. You know, I was just thinking the other day about what an easy transition it is for people like you and I in law, who, because essentially when you're writing a proposal, like a settlement proposal or an argument, you are telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Of what has happened. And essentially, like, as a judge, you listen to stories all day long.
Yep. Absolutely.
You have to make a decision about them, which is different, but you're still hearing about people's lives, their histories, their mistakes,
yep,
their triumphs, you know, and so in law, I think that there are probably, because, you know, there's a few people that are that had been lawyers that went on to become famous authors. And
John Grisham, anybody? Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them. And there was I think there's a woman as well. I can't remember her name, but there's quite a few. You meet, mm-hmm, a lot of writers in law.
Yeah. There's a trial lawyer down here who's fond of saying that, to be a good trial lawyer, you got to be a good storyteller.
Yeah, actually, absolutely.
There's a lot of truth to that. I mean, you know, what is a lawsuit but conflict? And that's the central kind of unifying, animating spirit of any story is conflict. I think you're absolutely right, Karen.
Now, can you tell us any wild stories from the bench? Obviously, leaving names out.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's kind of sad. I don't get any good war stories anymore, because on the appellate bench, everything happens off camera. I mean, everything we get is, you know, it's just sort of the cold transcript record. So yeah, we just don't get any good war stories. But yeah, that's all right, because I had plenty when I was in practice.
You did, eh? Now, what kind of law did you practice?
So I did real estate and business litigation.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's scorching. I'm in litigation.
Yeah. Personal injury. Right. We're ambulance chasers.
Okay. All right. All right.
Yeah.
So we used to have, so I don't know what your car insurance is like down there, but here, up until a couple of years ago, you used to be able to sue for pecuniary damages. And that, Rob, is like pain and suffering. So all day long, you're reviewing files and you're reading medical records and you're coming up with reasons why this person is injured and why they can't work and why they're having erectile dysfunction and why they're, you know, like all these things.
Oh, yeah.
That go along with, you know, personal injury and car accidents.
That actually reminds me of one funny story. This was when I think it was like a first year brand new associate. I was at a big firm and we were doing some big product liability defense. It had to do with hip implants, and I'll never forget, I'd maybe been a lawyer for like 9 or 10 months, and I had to take a deposition of this. It was a class action, and this was it was multi-district litigation, and it was this one elderly couple, just the sweetest, nicest elderly folks you could ever imagine. You know, like in their 70s, and they'd been married for 50 years. And one of the claims that they had brought was a loss of consortium claim, which for those of you all who aren't in law, that basically means the loss of companionship and, you know, sexual companionship. That,
yeah.
So I was having to ask this sweet old couple about, you know, well, can you tell me how this affected your bedroom life? And it was so awful. And the lady, she was such an angel. After the deposition was over, she must have seen just how many shades of red I was blushing. She came over to me, patted me on the shoulder, and said, "You did a great job, dear.
Good job, son. You're going to be a good lawyer."
It was awful.
A good lawyer.
That's awesome.
Do you ever find any inspiration from any of the cases that you've worked on?
Not from the cases, but, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. It's kind of funny. Because I don't want to write like legal thrillers or, you know, courtroom dramas or whatever. Yeah. You know, John Grisham's got a lock on that, and he's doing great with that. That's just not what I'm really interested in writing. But what I realized is that every book I've ever written thus far has a courtroom scene in it at some point. So it must be percolating up somehow.
Yeah.
You want to show what it was really like in the courtroom. That's.
No, for whatever, it may be a minor plot point, but it comes up. So
yeah, that's funny. What else do you like to show? Like, do you have any other themes that you're like, oh, I just love throwing this in no matter what?
So
I do that, Kari. Like I've got two good buddies, right? And I talk to them every day, and I try to work them into. Although Chuck has made an appearance, but my buddies, you never see him, Rick and Ed, because we have a private Discord, and if that ever leaked, like it would be horrible.
I know Ed. I think
you probably know him. Yeah, Ed Lingar. Yeah.
I don't know him. I don't know him.
Right?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Okay. So,
but I work him into stories all the time. Like they always show up. That's my thing. Like I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they know this?
Oh yeah, they're my beta readers. I stumbled into beta readers like you stumbling into outlining to plotting, and you're like, oh my god, everybody should do this. Like I stumbled into beta readers. I was talking with Ed, and I'm like, hey, I want to start writing this book, and I want some help. I want you and do you think you and Rick would read them and just be brutal? Just give me brutal critiques. And he's like, oh yeah, we totally do that. And then I come to find out they're beta readers. I had an editor like, oh, you have beta readers. What's a beta reader?
What's a beta reader? Right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But do you, Matt, do you have any other themes you like to work in that you're like either conscious or unconscious?
So one thing that I've found, it's not so much like people or events, but I love playing with ideas and trying to like kind of work them into books. I was brought up in a religious household, so I find that religion usually kind of plays in there at some point. Not a lot in Yonder and Far, but there's a little flavor of it here and there. So I love playing with those kind of ideas and seeing kind of how they play out with characters. So there's a little bit of stuff about free will and how people are held to their bargains and their word when they give their word, things like that. That does tend to come into the stuff that I like to write.
Nice. Yeah.
I wonder if that has anything to do with being a judge too, like free will.
I mean, like the one of the things that comes up in Yonder and Far is a really neat magical system that, to my knowledge, I don't know that anybody's ever tried this. It is kind of loosely based on contract and contract law, very loosely based, but that's kind of one of the animating principles of sort of the magic, if you will, that happens in the book. So, and I'm not giving anything away with that. No.
No, you're not. Yeah. It's really cool. So characters can make promises, and the promises are tangible, right? They almost become something you can hold, but they're a part of somebody, becomes something that the person holding the promise has hold of it, and they can kind of bend their will if they want. Yep. No, that doesn't give anything away. You can go on now.
Okay. Okay.
Everybody, your book.
Rob is not only my editor, he's also my censor.
Yeah, he's also your narrator.
No, you're giving away too much.
Matt was giving away too much at this point, and the press would be upset.
And this is your book that's just come out.
Yeah, it just came out a week ago. So really excited. Just starting to gain an audience now. So far I've heard nothing but good things. So really, really pleased with the job that Alyssian has done with this.
And what's the name of this, your latest book?
This one is called Yonder and Far, The Lost Lock. And it's hopefully going to be a series, the Yonder and Far series. It's named after the two main characters, John Yonder and Captain John Far. This first book's called The Lost Lock.
The Lost Lock. And it's by Alyssian Press, and it's already out?
Mm-hmm. It is already out. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
it's
already out. 3-4 copies, share them with friends. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Stocking and now stuffers. And you've written a few other books? Or is this your first one?
This is actually my second book out from a press. My first book came out a little over a year ago with a different press. That's a very different book called The Mountain. That's sort of a much darker kind of dystopian epic fantasy, very different feel and tone than Yonder and Far.
Wow, that's amazing! And it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's been great being here with you. I really do appreciate
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on, Matt. It's we're kind of out of time for the day, though, aren't we, Rob?
We are. This is where we always run into problems, because we keep talking with most of our guests forever.
I mean, I didn't even get to ask about the influx of boa constrictors in the Everglades, which is like my main focus of Florida these days is looking.
Don't go into the Everglades.
Is that so?
No, just good advice. Just make sure you're not. Yeah, make sure you got a boat or something. But yeah,
is it true though? Is it true? Are the Everglades being overrun by boa constrictors and anacondas?
It's pythons, and it came about because people had them as pets, didn't want to, couldn't take care of them because, they're pythons. And so just decided to let them loose. And son of a gun, those things just took to the Everglades like it was Shangri-La. There's a lot of them down there now. They do annual hunts for them. It's a big deal.
Well, I'll be thinking of you down there dodging pythons
and alligators, like madmen with alligators
and alligators.
Yes,
but remember, they're also a weapon.
That's right.
Yes.
And so tell us where we can find you, Matt.
Sure. So best place, I don't do a ton of social media, but I am pretty good about keeping up on my website. Got a little blog on writing. It's www.MatthewCLucas. Matthew has two T's and Lucas is LUCAS, www.MatthewCLucas.com.
MatthewCLucas.com. And do you have a Facebook page or an Instagram?
I've got a Facebook page. Not quite as frequent on that, but I do have a Facebook page, yes.
But the best place to find you is your website, where you have a writing blog.
I do.
And there you have it, folks. That's Matthew C. Lucas. And his latest book is called Yonder and Far. And that's from Elysium Press, which I'm sure you can find. Where can you find the book, Rob?
You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and pretty much anywhere fine books are sold.
And we will share that link for you folks with the podcast. And until then, Matt, your honor. Is that what do people call you, your honor?
Nobody ever calls me that. Just hey you. No, that's good.
Well, here we do. We call them the honorable. I will say, I think it fits. I think it's very fitting for you, the honorable Matt Lucas. You're lucky you're not a Canadian judge because they have to wear wigs and robes.
Oh, thank God.
And until next time, good night, Rob.
Good night, Kari.
Good night, Matt. Good night, readers. Keep reading.